This is Paul Sandel with Scott Sosby and Laura Blackburn with the Charlie Wilson Oral History Project. We're continuing our conversation with Charles Simpson and transitioning into a conversation with Kyle Simpson. Though I didn't want to lose the story we were last hearing from Charles, we asked you, you know, why you had decided to leave, and you gave us two reasons, and it sounded you were pretty much concluding with the second reason, with the incident with the bridge.
That was maybe the... I may have allowed that to influence me some, because I did begin to think about it at that time. What was I going to do? How was I going to get out? And maybe Charlie needed somebody else to work with him, or, although he had never indicated it. And I did need to earn a little more money for college education. Mm-hmm. And then it was a while after that all of a sudden, it was 2 or 3 months after that, maybe longer now, I don't know, that I got an inquiry from Benson's office as to whether I would be interested in coming over there.
Okay.
And there was a complication to that, because Kyle's sister worked for him.
Is that right?
And so I, when they asked me if I would entertain it, I said not till I talked to Terry. And I immediately got with her, and I says, I've been asked to consider this. I'm still with Charlie. And you're over here, and the first thing I'll have to do is fire you, because he won't let anyone, two members of the same family, work together. Hmm. And I told him that too, that was the case. And so that was always his lead whenever after that. Of course, she wasn't going to stand in the way. And she was ready to go to graduate school and get her other degrees. And so we cut a deal. And it made it all work very smoothly. But it worked out for both of us. But then that was Benson's always, anytime he introduced me, was the man that I hired, who then fired his daughter, who was working for me.
Did you stay with him until he left to become Secretary of Treasury?
Did not. I worked for him for 3 years.
Okay.
And another opportunity came along, and I still had bills to pay.
That'll make a lot of decisions for you, won't it? Certainly.
And his sister going on to graduate school.
Well, Kyle, you, to some extent, to bring you in, you kind of grew up with Charlie almost then, didn't you?
In a lot of ways.
So just give us your favorite impressions. What is it about Charlie that you remember the most?
Well, it was my first introduction to political campaigns, because when he ran for, I guess it was the state senate, was when you first got involved with him, and we would go out and put up signs, almost pine trees. Eventually learning to put them up high enough that people couldn't rip them down. And some of them stayed up there for
months, years. And I did not bring in the two ladders that were used, which are in my garage.
Oh, you used to have
a 16-foot ladder and a 12-foot ladder to take these young guys and a couple of football players from SFA and get in the van or pickup, because we all usually had a van, and a tub in the back of it full of beer.
Sounds
Saturdays.
That's right.
For them to climb up, we'd stop at the tall pine tree and they'd go to the top of the ladder and they'd nail them up there good. And everybody, they were from all the way from Houston line, Conroe line at Houston, to north of Nacogdoches, to the county line. Everybody driving down Highway 69, is that what it is?
59.
Mm-hmm. To Houston. How in the hell did they get those things up there?
Well, it's an eye catcher, isn't it?
It is.
The highway department come along, try to knock them down. They didn't have enough pole.
That's right. Danny McCowan and Dean Moore.
Anyway,
two football players. That were, but that was it. I mean, that was my introduction to politics, really, and got to know Charlie gradually over time. That was, and then he ran when he ran then for Congress. You know, we just kept kind of sticking with him. And Jim Ledbetter, who was one of Dad's students, who had originally introduced Dad to Charlie and then me to Charlie, has been a long time family friend. And then when we had a chance to, well, when he won the race and we had a chance to come up here, I actually stayed in Nacogdoches through the spring track season and lived with one of those football players in his trailer house while Mom and Dad came up here and Terry. And then, but probably the thing that I did sort of grow up with him. And when he'd go on a trip, I'd look out for his house, his condo. And then he wanted me, he offered to give me an appointment to any of the military academies that I might want to go to, none of which I wanted to go to. So I ended up making Mom and Dad pay for my Brown education. But he flew into town. I mean, he was deadly serious about doing it. And he flew into town, and I decided I wasn't going to go. And Dad said, okay, you go pick him up at the airport, and you tell him you're not going to go. But there was, you know, that was, he was really generous with me, and I appreciated that. And he looked, you know, he looked out after me, and I met a lot of very interesting people through him. Met Ted Turner through him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, in his office one day. They were having a bottle of Jack Daniels, as I recall.
On government property.
No.
But those are really, and he was that way all the way through. I mean, even after he left, he worked. He was a consultant for a fellow that I ultimately ended up working for, Oscar Wyatt at Coastal.
Oh, okay.
And when Charlie left, he did that.
So you knew him quite a bit. You stayed in like contact post congressional career.
Oh yeah.
He also worked. He gave you a job in the
at least two.
Yeah.
One of them, the real glamorous jobs, summertime jobs. One of them was in the folding room, which I don't even know if they have the things anymore with the computers, but it's where we used to put together all of the mail outs that the members would do in the basement of the Longworth House office building. And then he got me a job at night in the attic of the Capitol in a space which is now the supplement to the speaker's offices, but at that time it was the document room. And so there were file cabinets all over the place full of legislation, and people would send in requests for copies of this and that, and we just spent the night filling those orders. But I had the run of the Capitol building at night with nobody around, and that was fun. And then one of the other things I did for him, He, back when the process was that whoever was the first in line of your class of election got the first choice of offices after an election. So Charlie paid...
Or after somebody died.
Or after somebody died. So Charlie paid me and one of my high school buddies $100 to spend the night in the Cannon office building so that he could be first in line.
To choose a new office.
To choose a new office.
Good story.
So we slept on the stairs, those cold marble stairs, and I don't know how much we actually slept, but... you couldn't do that today.
I bet you, that's what I say. I bet you run to the Capitol at night and spend the night in an office. I bet that doesn't go on.
Doesn't happen very much. But it was pretty neat to be to work. I forget what the shift was. It was like 8 to 3 or something. And the place got pretty empty at that point. But he did. He gave me those two, what do you call them?
Patronage
jobs. Mm-hmm. And that helped a lot, and to get through working, because I started working when I was probably 12, you know, mowing and doing those sorts of things, and then trying to have some spending money of my own when I went off to college. And, so I spent those years, and he was very good about that. And then I got to know his staff extremely well. When I started lobbying, mm-hmm. which I did right after I got out of college, just by luck and probably a little bit of his help. I spent a lot of time in Wilson's office when I was up on the hill. I needed a place to be between meetings and what have you, so I would just hang out there and got to know probably everybody that ever worked for him.
Yeah.
As long as you were his administrative assistant.
Yeah. And when he says he got to know people in our office, Charlie's office consisted of me,
Larry,
and one other man, and part time another one.
Tim.
And then the women that you all are meeting.
So it was a pleasant place.
It was absolutely a
hard place. Young man, you were fine with this.
That's right. Early 20s. What the hell?
Did he, I asked this question. He said he needed money. Did Charlie like lobbying in that part when he left the Congress?
Did he like what?
Did he like doing it?
I think so.
Yeah. He didn't have to do it like a lot of people have to do, because so much of it came to him. Mm-hmm. For example, he represented Pakistan forever and ever and ever. He had a great relationship with Pakistan that he earned within the first couple of years that he was here in Washington by just flatly telling the ambassador here and the head of government over there that they had to take some of the restrictions off of women. And the women of Pakistan, the first award Charlie ever got from anybody was a plaque from the women of Pakistan for introducing it couldn't be legislation, but something to commemorate that here on Capitol Hill. And he meant it. That's like you said, that's like integrating East Texas. He was for it. And he felt like people ought to be equal. And so that started his relationship with Pakistan. Now, it had a little bit of negative impact from the leadership, but then when they wanted F-15s, and Charlie was on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee of the House, they kind of let that go. And he really became a great friend of Pakistan. And then Joanne Herring, if you said you visited her place, hurried down there and talked to her about that, about don't know what you talked to about. You didn't tell me. But
talked a lot about Joanne. That's what we did. But that was one of her favorite topics.
Yeah.
But we did talk a lot about her relationship and her late husband's relationship with Pakistan.
Yeah.
And kind of introducing Charlie to the people who ran Pakistan.
Yeah, I'll be interested in reading some of that.
Well, we can let you read it and look at it and tell us what you think. A lot of people have suggested, well, not suggested, they've said, Charlie left Congress to make, Charlie could have continued to win elections in that district if he wanted to stay around.
Absolutely.
But he had grown so disgusted with the direction of Congress and what it had become, that's why he left. You could both probably speak to that, how he spoke of it and what he said.
He could see the future. He could see what was happening. When we came here, the Texas delegation had two or three, I can't remember exactly, Republicans. Mm-hmm. Maybe four, I believe it was. And that's not to say anything negative about either party. But it had been all Democrats, and it had been all conservative Democrats. They were just,
six of them were committee chairmen. You'd have to look
that's
back
why that. That, yeah, I told them that.
Yeah.
And Houston was changing, and you had Barbara Jordan, who was the first black then to come in. You had Mickey Leland then that came in after that, and Mickey was a good friend, although he and Charlie didn't agree on everything. But it really began to change. But the change, he would not have survived in this last Congress health-wise, because he would have gone nuts. Mm-hmm. The fact that you don't sit down and talk to each other, and you don't figure these things out, instead you just scream and yell and whatever they do over there nowadays. Mm-hmm. So but he could have continued to be elected. I would agree with that. He's the best campaigner you could have. Mm-hmm. And he would have had to bring in some industry, and some maybe did bring in one defense plant and the hospital for veterans.
Well, that's a great story about that happening.
So. Yeah, but
scratching out the name, convincing that Lufkin is a suburb of Tyler.
Yeah.
And had some help from Jim Wright.
But did he say anything to you in that was revealing? Or I mean,
no, not terribly. You could just tell that it was beginning to be wearing on him, and the style of campaigning was changing. It was still fairly a collegial institution at that point. But it was changing, and his experience in the Texas House and the Senate, and then in Congress, and I mean he had developed all these relationships all around the world. It's just time for him to go and do some other things.
I think he regrets, of course, missed being a congressman though.
Oh, probably. I think most of them miss being congressman when they leave.
He was, I'm sure that he had the recognition and the way he carries himself anyway. Anybody that's ever met him knows him. That's straight, erect, 6'4", 150 pounds. it just is a, they're bound to, and staff to take care of him. And that was part of what it was by taking care. I don't mean doing the laundry. Mm-hmm. I mean all of the people in our office learned a trade. They learned, they had a trade, they put it to work, they had skills.
Mm-hmm.
And they took care of the people in the district. And that's really all you have to do to get reelected, is take care of the needs of the people you're representing. and that can be done. It's not for him to come in and impose his view on them, and he didn't. But now they're trying to impose their views on 100% of the people in the district.
Definitely a different institution, without a doubt.
But the constituent service was a big deal. Mm-hmm. Big deal. And it and also let him get away with a lot. You know, where he could, they knew that they were gonna, he was going to take care of them. So, okay, you can be that way. You can carouse a little bit.
You can do that, yes. Charlie had a, yeah, that's right. They'll leave you alone, let you play around and chase.
But that's why he could also get, probably have continued to get reelected until somebody really went after him. I might disagree just a little bit that he could have perpetually.
Well, you're involved in it more than I am now.
Yeah. Somebody would have ultimately gone after his character.
Well, there's no listening busing here. I know, I hope. The guy we have in that district now, my gosh. Sure, somebody beat
him. But it is a different district than Charlie's district.
It is a different district, and they've redrawn the boundaries so much. So.
It's a different district than Charlie's. But he did face really bad attacks from Donna Peterson.
Yeah.
But she herself is such a suspect character that she couldn't go far.
Right.
But he was getting attacked now by, what, that was 90, 92, 94 elections against her. Right, I think that's right.
Yeah, but consider the fact that her basic support, a lot of it was coming out of Vider, which is the head of the Texas Klan.
Mm.
And that it was that kind of individual.
Yeah.
Well, she had to be financed, which she was, but I think she could never have beaten him. But again, he'd been accustomed to not having to campaign that hard. The first few years, he campaigned a few terms hard. I mean, they were classic campaigns of strong defense, take care of the people, and then bring the people together, better schools and that sort of thing.
He spent a lot of time in the district.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But then it gets harder to go home because the same people aren't there anymore when you try to go home over a long, long period of time. And he needed the money again. The economics drive you to a certain degree in a lot of things you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, I mean, one thing, I mean, Charlie might have been accused of a lot of things. One thing he was never accused of was any sort of financial improprieties whatsoever. So, I mean, that part, I have to be honest. But I often wonder when I hear stories about the big party he threw for his niece with the, what was it, the Arab theme or African theme, what it was, and everybody in costumes, and it was just his sister was just, and things like this that he did quite often. And I was, where did he find the money? A congressman's salary is good, but it's not great.
Yeah, and but again, there was an awful lot of, Charlie had a lot of friends, and he had a lot of appeal, and so he could attract a lot of different kinds of individuals that would help out with those parties. Besides his niece, well, I don't know much about that one because it was after after I left. I do know that a few things that he did, and that you may have noticed in copying. I know you didn't read all that stuff, but there was also, I think, my notes there that indicated. Well, maybe there weren't. I don't know whether I left them in there or not. But anyway, Abba Ghazala, who was the defense minister, was invited to Scrappin Valley, which was Arthur Temple's lodge down in East Texas. He did not come, but he would have been entertained down there. That would have been a major event too.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie was invited to be on the stand with Anwar Sadat the day he was assassinated.
Is that right?
Wow.
And my original notes on that are in this stuff somewhere.
Really?
That he was supposed to be sitting there with him as an honored guest. Fortunately, he didn't go.
Yeah.
That might not have anything happened to him, but there might have. There are just lots of things that he did. Because he enjoyed the international atmosphere, he's largely responsible for Egypt getting their first F-15s, for Saudi Arabia getting their first F-15s, and Israel went a little bit berserk, especially the Houston Jewish community, because he appropriated the money for, in the Appropriations Committee, he supported that, for F-15s for Egypt and Saudi Arabia. But Charlie was able to persuade them that the only way to keep peace was to have a strong Egypt as well as a strong Israel. And Egypt, and he wasn't the only one, there were others doing it too, but he was principal in that. Egypt, then, that could become a zero sum or a neutral situation with two strong powers, and Egypt, which was the strongest Muslim power in that area and state in that area, working together.
Of course, he was a huge Israeli supporter. I mean, he supported Israel very strongly.
Yep. Yeah. But he supported Egypt too. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, the first trip he took internationally after we came up here was to go to Israel after the Six-Day War, mm-hmm. and to drive out where they were fighting, mm-hmm. he and his wife. They had a guide, but they drove right out to the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And that was the start, mm-hmm. of the beginning of what had been a strong relationship. Anyway, he had a strong relationship with that community in the in Austin as well. He had no obligations to them, mm-hmm. but he believed in the little people. Mm-hmm. And that was more of that belief in the little people. And he really believed that if Israel got too strong, there was a problem, or could be. And if Egypt got too strong, it would be a problem.
I think I know the answer to this question, Joe, again, at the start, this is the post-congressional career. But even during it, a lot of congressmen tolerate Washington when they come here, I think. But did Charlie like living in Washington? Did he miss East Texas a lot?
I think he missed East Texas, but he liked
Washington.
And Washington has very wide boundaries. It goes all the way to Boston and all the way to the Panama Canal and farther. I mean, it's not just here. But yeah, he liked Washington. He liked to go to New York. That's why he was up there and criticized for being up there 1 year when in the Democratic primary was held in Texas. He was on the ballot. And instead of being down there working the campaign, he was in Washington, and his picture appeared on the front page of the New York Times the next day with the election results. And one of the reporters asked him, "Why are you here in New York instead of being in Lufkin? In your own district on election day?" Well, he didn't have an opponent. But what he said was, standing there, he said, "I wanted," and then the election was in the Democratic primary between Moynihan and Bill Abzug. Okay. And his quote was, I just wanted to see if New Yorkers would vote for a sane person. And they voted for Moynihan.
You were going to say what you thought about it.
Oh, he liked Washington. Yeah, he really enjoyed being here. I mean, and I mean, he invested in a nightclub. He did lived in a great place over by the behind the Iwo Jima Memorial. He's a little bit. He liked going back to East Texas, but and he looked out for things there. But this was more of his persona.
When did he get involved in this nightclub? I've heard it mentioned before, but I don't know much about it. What's its name? Where Elan, was it located?
Elan, E-L-A-N. And it was on K Street, mm-hmm. about 21st or 22nd.
Yeah. 19, somewhere in that strip.
In that strip there.
Yeah. And when did he first invest in that?
That, I can't give you the date, I don't remember, but...
rough ballpark era.
He'd been in the 80s because it was before I got married.
Okay, he has a better reference.
I was like, wait a minute.
He might have been.
Hey, I was like, wait a minute. This is falling right together real quick.
It's an early 80s, honey. Yep.
And to make the story complete, it was an investment with Buddy Temple.
Okay.
And I don't, and two or three others from his Senate days.
Okay.
And I don't know for sure. I can't remember who had other investments in it, but Buddy Temple was one of them.
Right, that's true.
And they had to come up with some cash and buy into it. It was not a gift mm-hmm. by any means. It was an
was
investment.
It was a good place to go.
Oh, yeah.
Louise and I went to.
Well, did he do all right? Was his investment a good?
I
good
have
one?
No idea how it ended up.
As long as the disco lasted, for a craze, it was okay.
Yeah, that's probably right.
But it as soon as disco, your disco didn't last long. No. And thank when he went down. That
But it was fun.
That was fun watching Jim Wright and Larry King ride horses up and down K Street.
That would be real. And we had hoped to interview Larry, but he's not. He's helping.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know. But he moved back to Lucky. You know, he went back to Lucky.
Yeah, sure.
So he left. Went back home. I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I just wonder how hard of a decision that was.
I don't think it was that hard because his health was in pretty bad shape at that point.
Yeah.
As I understand it, and you may tell me differently, his doctor basically said, you gotta stop this. A good way to stop is to go back to Lovett. And he still had his house.
Well, he had a new wife.
And he had a new wife. And he had straightened up his act substantially.
Well, and that's another, I mean, there's been some people allude to the fact that particularly at some points during the whole Afghanistan, which all that was going on, but then even after that, later, when maybe stress and changes or whatever, that perhaps the drinking did get out of control.
I don't think there's any question about that. I know there's not any question about that, He drank more than he needed to. When I first met him, he would throw a big party at his home on Crooked Creek, and a lot of people would come in, and they would have all that they wanted to drink. Charlie would, at some time during the party, which lasted sometimes a long time, either disappear for a while, or he would just lay down in the floor and go to sleep. Hour later, he would wake up, and you'd never know he's been drinking. But he was younger.
Yeah.
And as he got older, some of it got to it. And so he did drink more than he should have. And the doctors began to talk to him about it. And Barbara cut it off when he married her. She said, only if. And he loved her that much. And that's when they went back to life.
You know her very well?
Yeah, I knew her pretty well. Not real well. I didn't. She had been, she and friends we had seen her in the office with some of her friends that had introduced them at one time. She was a ballet dancer in one of the ballets here. And he went to every ballet before her and after. He loved it. And
well, he was on the board, wasn't he?
He got on the board at a later date. But, I mean, that's just, for some reason or other, well, beautiful women, I guess. But also, it was a form of entertainment he enjoyed. And she was one of them.
That said he got on the board of the Kennedy Center because that was a good place to take dates and he wouldn't have to pay for anything.
He said that.
Sharon said the same thing.
Sure.
So even when you're on Sister's
you can go there for free.
He and Sharon were close.
Well, I mean, because I don't know that it's a secret. I think it was pretty apparent by Barbara's actions. Whatever. She didn't like life. She didn't like living in life.
Of course not. She would have probably preferred Houston. But still, this is where she had been, and she liked that. Mm-hmm. And again, that was after I left. There were lots of times when he had done something he thought was really good, he would send me a note about it or call me and talk to me about it. Or when the staff had a problem after I left, they still had my phone number. And so they would call me. And I was only there 12 years, but I wasn't far away. And so there were a lot of times.
12 years is a pretty long time for AA, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
It is. I mean, that's fairly rare.
Absolutely. Yeah, most of them are not that long. He and I got along very well. We didn't run together.
Yeah.
Nobody really ran with him.
Well, you talked a little bit about your decision to go with him and become his AA when he was elected to Congress. Ultimately, why did you decide to do that? I mean, you could have stayed in Nacogdoches.
I could have stayed in Nacogdoches. But it was an opportunity to see some things I'd never seen. I'm sitting here teaching something I don't know that much about. I can read the books, but I didn't have any practical experience. And I had never been up here. So I really wanted to learn about it, thinking, well, then they'll go back and teach more and better. I love teaching.
Potomac fever set in.
That's what they call
Potomac
it.
Fever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's a great place for whatever you want. Mm-hmm. One story I want to tell you, and maybe Archie told you, if I may break in here, but it deals with this too. I didn't know Charlie very well July when we came up here. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the July, it was after the general election that we came up later in November. And he had asked me if I'd come with him at that point. we landed at Dulles, got a cab, came down, crossed the river, and he said to the cab driver, take us to the Lincoln Memorial. Went to the Lincoln Memorial. He said, wait for us here. You could drive around it then, where you can't now. He waited right there in front of it. Charlie and I walked up that steps, and he read every word in that Lincoln Memorial. And then, and wanted me to as well. And then we turned around and we could see the Capitol, and I was just, you know, I'd never seen those things. But he read every word.
I did too Monday night.
That's a good thing to do.
But there's an awful lot of people would think Charlie wouldn't do that. He, I mean, this city, with what he had done while he was in the Navy, and reading those maps and what have you, and working at the Pentagon, it really got to him, and he was dedicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is an awe-inspiring sight from the top of the steps when you look down.
Oh yeah, it really is, particularly at night.
And I was learning about him. Yeah, back then they turned the lights off in the Nixon era, and you couldn't go up there at night.
Nixon's out doing something.
That's right.
And it needs it dark.
That was bad news when that happened, because if you don't take a tour of this city at night, you miss
you
it.
You do miss
it.
Yeah. You're right.
So, anyway, that was my introduction. And then we came up here to be, he said, I'm going to go see one group of people to learn how to be a congressman. You need to go talk to Tiger Teague's AA, who had been his first sergeant in the World War II, and had been with him ever since that as his administrative assistant. They now call him basically chief of staff, but back then it went, used to everybody in office as a clerk. Then they had the administrative assistant and clerks, and then they had chief of staff. So we came up here, and I went to see his AA, who was a little bit rough, but not really. He said, Simpson, why do you come now? You've come too late. And he was taking me across to the Capitol from his office. We were standing out there on the corner in front of the Longworth building. He says, every Wednesday at 3:00 in the afternoon, the bus used to stop right here and pick us all up and take us out to the Washington Senator Stadium to watch the ball game.
Wow.
So they don't do that anymore. You're late. You're just too late to have fun. And
of course, they'd absconded to Arlington by then.
That's right. That's right. But George Fisher was his name, and that was just to me exactly right, leading up to what Charlie said about why or people say about him not fitting in or not wanting to be here is that
his way had changed.
Yeah. And nobody ever knew they did that. Nobody ever said anything about it. They also used to take off all summer.
Well, until they air conditioned these buildings.
Yeah, well, yeah. That would make you want to leave in the summertime for sure.
And as a result of that, each member of Congress was given a trunk, railroad trunk, provided every year to move what the papers and stuff he needed to from his home district up here on the train. Well, why'd they say train? Well, that's what we're running back then. And so those trunks stacked up in his storeroom because none of them, you know, they drove up here, and they went back to home every month. Lots of things have changed. When we came up here, they limited the amount of time you could spend on telephone. They had a long distance phone system, and they had two people could make long distance phone calls on it. The member and the AA, free of charge. But for every minute you were charged, I think it was 4 points, and you were given 25,000 points per session.
Okay.
And if you ran over that, the member had to pay cash for everything after that.
Oh, wow.
Well, Charlie had come out of the state senate where you could, they had unlimited long distance. And it was hard on him. So he says, you monitor those points. I don't want to have to pay any cash. And you can call home. They were still at home. Mm-hmm. You can do business, and I can. But nobody else in the office can use it. Mm-hmm. We still had mimeograph machines. There were no computers on Capitol Hill. That's all changed, and changed very rapidly. And one of the leaders in that change was Lloyd Benson. I mean, he had the most professional staff, and it was recognized on Capitol Hill. And up-to-date businessman means of using it. But we've seen a lot of growth and a lot of change that way. But but this, and you also had a limited number of staffers. And what you could pay them. Now there's a max, but you can divide it up. Charlie got, the congressman got 6 trips, round trips, back to the district during one session. And then he had 3 trips for his staff, one member of his staff, round trip. And you could not exchange money. They started out saying, well, you can use some of that staff money that you have. If you don't hire 2 people, you've got more money to fly around the world. These just administrative things that nobody knows. But they were, had an impact on what you could and what you couldn't do. I was fortunate in that all of those extras came to me. So I could go back and talk to the district office. Smartest thing you haven't asked me about, and Peyton or probably talked about it a lot, and I don't, was you could only have 1 district office when we first came up here. Then they said, well, you can have, you got another population center, you can have another one.
Okay.
But we had 20 counties, and we didn't have a major population center. Lufkin's the biggest town. Orange was about the same size, and they were both under 30,000. Nacogdoches had 24,000, and he wouldn't have put one up there anyway.
Didn't sound like it.
It was close enough to Lufkin to go there. So he was one of the first. He was the second one actually to put a mobile office in play.
Who was the first, by the way?
Do what?
Who was the first, by the way?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
But I, but there was one other that did it, where you could take your staff, your office money, and you could lease or use part of it, or however you could get it, and lease a bus or a mobile home, and use that then to travel. And that's what we did in those 20 counties. You could use the Frank, and this part of the shrewdness of Wilson, you could use the Frank to send out notices you were going to be at the courthouse in Palestine or wherever, Hemp Hill, somewhere in East Texas. Well, we knew every domino game that was going to be played, where they were going to be played, and what have you. We arranged then with the county judge to have a parking place, mm-hmm. and we would take announce ahead of time that we were going to be there, mm-hmm. and then or that we were coming. Then we'd send out another one announcing where we were going to be and what time we were going to be there. Then when we left, we would send another mailing thanking the people that showed up. We could put signs on the side of the bus. And so everybody going down 59 saw that bus coming. They told their neighbor, "We saw old Charlie today." Wilson was not in that thing very much. The head of our district office was there most, well, all the time, mm-hmm. whoever it happened to be. And then it sat parked at the courthouse or at the wherever the most people were going to be milling around. Mm-hmm. And it did business like mad. And the thing that, again, I pick out some of these, I just can't get them out of my head. Up at Teague, Texas, which is the far northwestern corner of the 20 counties, mm-hmm. in Navarre County, I believe, the Charlie went one day, and he would go 2-3 times a year on these trips. When we drove up, and the, remember they were closing down a lot of buildings in these small towns, and they were becoming senior centers all over the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. They had closed a clothing store or something, and the senior citizens had gotten some money together, and they rented it. Mm-hmm. And they, that's where they had lunch once a week or two times a week. We parked right in front of it. Senior citizens need help. When we pulled up there, there was a car sitting right over at the on the other side of the street, and in that car was a little old lady. I think just the two of them, a little old lady and her son. Mm. They happened to be black, and so the senior center wasn't open yet. We'd gotten there a little bit early, and Charlie says, "Go over and see if they want to see me." So I did. And the lady didn't have a leg. She had one leg. And her son had was bringing her in because she couldn't. So I turned her down on Social Security 2-3 times. And she was old enough. Charlie reacted the same way. I get emotional. Anyway, we got her $4,500. And her put on the rolls of Social Security for benefits. And we were all just like this because we could help her.
And that explains that quite often, you know, that's who he was. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. I mean, we're talking about how he continues to get elected. That's how it was.
Why? Yeah.
And I'm not so sure that Congressman Dubin not in that same way anyway.
No, you're right. You're right. The place has become a lot more, it's become harsh. And I mean, they'll go home to their districts and what have you, but and do things, but they don't. They just don't play the same way anymore. Maybe that'll change at some point. But yeah. It's
I don't know. Once you let something go and go to something else, does it ever go back?
Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, not really. But these were earned benefits. She should have been getting them for the last 5 years. We finally got her $9,000 or so of back pay.
Yeah.
And yeah, we told that story.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it worked. And you know, she was scared to death, and her son was just.
I think so. I mean, I just. Well, besides the fact that, and what year are you talking about?
We're talking about 70. It was after we'd been up here about 6 years.
So, besides the whole, I'm dealing with the Social Security and a federal government and a congressman. I mean, this is an African American woman having to ask.
Yeah.
A big, tall, white congressman to do something.
That's right.
And that's bound to be intimidating.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess he made her feel that he, and maybe that was one of his great gifts too, making everybody feel at ease. A lot of people have said that.
I think he could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've asked a lot of people, and I'll ask both, I'll ask Kyle first. If you could ask Charlie something that you've always wanted to know, about his career, his life, something maybe you didn't know that he can answer, what would you ask?
I guess the real question would be, what made you run for office in the first place? Because it was not... He was not a person that I would have picked.
Is that right?
Out, okay. Just because of his... And yet he came back, as soon as he got out of the Navy, he came back and ran for the state legislature. I'm not sure why, to tell you the truth.
Maybe he's ill suited?
I didn't know enough about what he actually cared about in the beginning. In the end, it became pretty obvious why, because of the various things that he would take on. But it would still be a curiosity to me as to why did you do it? Why did you run for the legislature the first time?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to know too. What would you ask? Is there anything? I mean, you and he probably talked extensively many times, but there's bound to maybe be something unanswered in you.
I hadn't really thought about that. Genuinely, I hadn't. I might have talked to him like I might have talked to a son at some point, asking him, why in the hell did you screw up so that you could not run for higher office because of the record you built?
Did he have aspirations for higher office?
Does the moon come up?
Did he just know he would never win?
With all of his baggage, yes. And he didn't want to go through that.
Knew he couldn't win a state. He just knew he couldn't have won a state.
Well, and you had some good politicians coming up. Along the line too, that there wasn't any way that he could have. My theory is that he wanted to be, first of all, Secretary of Defense.
Really?
He and I never discussed that, except he wanted to be senator too, because first thing he said, Simpson, we're here now. John Tower is here. He's a Republican. Let's keep up with all of the things he does. We want to know everything we can about John Tower. Well, we got the record of him, you know, when he. Everybody said about him, when you go to a restaurant, a fine restaurant somewhere, be sure that they don't give when you get to the table, you lift the tablecloth to be sure John Tower's not on it.
Well, you did prove that, you know, you can you can be too, and maybe this would translate to Charlie, I guess you can be too drunk and silly to be Secretary of Defense, but I guess not too drunk and silly to be a senator.
I didn't say that.
But I actually didn't need the PJ O'Rourke said it, and I stopped.
Oh, okay, okay. The other thing about that, as to what he wanted to be. He wanted to be senator, but his first shot, he was photographed in New York without his wife with some models. Mm-hmm. And that's long forgotten about. The only one in our office that probably knows anything about that is Candy Hooper. Mm-hmm. And because Candy was this, we hired her in August, I believe, if you may correct me, of the first year we were here. As bright as anybody we ever hired. She was out of the University of Indiana as a press person. And Jake Pickle had her on his as an intern. And Jake said to Charlie, says this, you ought to talk to her. And the minute Charlie saw her, he knew she was bright. and she was. And she is, you've already talked to her.
We will talk to her tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, we will talk to her tomorrow. I better be quiet then. But she is as bright as anybody that's ever worked for Charlie Wilson. Mm-hmm. And she's with him a long time. But I think she probably knew about that. And that embarrassed Charlie. He didn't realize the press would be after you quite like that. It wasn't that way in Austin. Mm-hmm. And he saw real quickly that he's going to have to toe the line a little bit more than he had in the past. And I'm not sure he's willing to do that. He wanted to be Secretary of Defense partly because I'm convinced, and this is my theory, mm-hmm. he'd gone to the Naval Academy. All of those young men, and it was all young men then, mm-hmm. that had been in the Naval Academy with him, were becoming admirals and captains and admirals and what have you. And he wanted them to know that he had succeeded too. Now, he would never, ever have said that in his life.
Gotcha.
But I believe that he did. And he wanted to take care of them. Mm-hmm. He would have given the Navy, I think, anything he possibly could to help build the strongest Navy in the world. And he would do the other services that way too, but mm-hmm. Navy was his.
Of course.
Do you know, was he ever considered? I mean, I guess Clinton would have been the only one that really would have considered him.
No, he was never considered.
Never just because of the image?
No, I think because he backed off of that little bit as time went on. I just think that it would also mean a huge amount of work that maybe he didn't want to do, but the opportunity never arose, shall we say. Mm-hmm.
Do either one of you know, I mean, given the fact that of all of his work and everything else, he was an expert in Pakistan, Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, and then we have 9/11, and we have the Taliban situation with the Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Did anybody from the Bush administration ever reach out to him to consulting, for counsel, for advice, contact?
It's interesting. I was, right before I came over here today, I was with former Congressman Ronnie Shouse from Mississippi. And I just said I was coming over here to talk about Charlie Wilson. And he didn't know that I knew him. And he started telling me a story about
which another congressman, and he went to see Charlie after Charlie had left the Congress. He said, I only met him one time, and he asked him that question. He said, did the Bush administration ever consult with you? And the answer that he got was no. I don't know.
That's what everybody's basically telling us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was funny that Ronnie would just
share that story. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting one if you think about it. With such expertise and the magnitude of what we're talking about, that an entire administration does not ask someone that has that information.
you remember I said early on today that Charlie made unusual friends when he came up here. Rather than going just his own clan and group, he talked to the New Yorkers and the Californians and others that his group. I think that's part of the attitude that exists, is that people talk to the people they know. Mm-hmm. And Charlie was not a joiner. Mm-hmm. He was not one that reached out to all of them, and yet he did. I keep thinking of things that he did. For example, when he went to Israel, he became the expert on Israel. Mm-hmm. He went out in the battlefield. He talked with them. Mm-hmm. And Zvi Rafia.
Yeah, I just interviewed him.
Zvi became one of the greatest friends, mm-hmm. not just of Charlie, but of the whole office. Anybody that knew him. But Charlie, he went to see those people. He went to Pakistan, and he visited with every prime minister they had, or president, mm-hmm. there. He did those things, but he went alone. He didn't. No, he didn't. he would not go with the delegation. He'd go, maybe a delegation, they'd break off. He would go right to the heart of the issue. Okay. Yeah, he had a beautiful woman with him in most instances. But he's not one that wanted to sit in the group, as he might say, with a bunch of constipated monks and talk about whatever they wanted to talk about.
But why would that? And that's just a baffling question to me, why they wouldn't take that opportunity.
I don't know. It's maybe they didn't think about it.
How could they not think about it?
Well, his reputation here, you've got a lot of egos here. And those egos are looking out for themselves.
Yeah.
Now, you probably wouldn't, right? He would have overlapped. He would have served when Cheney served in the House, mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah, they were there together.
But I guess there was never a relationship there.
Speaking of an ego.
Yeah, he had an ego. But Reagan listened to him.
Well, he Reagan had respect for him.
Yeah.
So it's not. It doesn't seem to me like this was would have been an inter party fight. Is it just? You are up here. Proper topic, but something I want to know. Was the Bush administration that insular?
Yeah.
I mean, we know from the stuff that they were, but I mean, this must have been like they all thought they were doing something double secret and didn't want anybody to know.
They were very insular and. Maybe not as insular as this administration, they didn't seek a lot of. You're right. They didn't seek a lot of advice from people they didn't know already.
Is Cheney running that insularity? I say that simply because when Bush was governor of Texas, he was like, I hate to say this, he actually wasn't a bad governor. There was some openness there.
Yeah.
And then he comes here and it just completely changes.
Well, this town is very... There are no microphones here.
We changed.
We got one.
Bush is not smart enough to deal on a broad basis. So he had to trust people, and he, and Cheney was one that he trusted, mm-hmm. whom I think is a very bright guy. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't really interested in a bunch of people's opinions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He had been the CEO of Halliburton. Used to getting his own. I had a really funny run in with him one time when I was working for the Secretary of Energy. We were out at what's the school for the deaf? College.
Gallaudet. Yeah.
Just happened to be a meeting there, mm-hmm. and Clinton was president, and Cheney was there. And I just couldn't resist it because I had done something when I was working for Coastal. We went over to Iraq and got some of the hostages out, and it just irritated the hell out of the Bush administration that we had done that. I mean, I got in an argument with the State Department at the airport in Baghdad, and I told Cheney that. I just couldn't resist it, and I just walked up and I said, you know, right. If looks could have killed,
wow,
he was not. I mean, he knew the incident, and it had an. He had an impression of it.
Yeah,
didn't want to talk about it.
He was the only one on that 707 besides the pilots.
Is that right?
Put the thing together. Yeah. They stopped by here, picked up.
That was quite the.
Passports.
That's quite a noteworthy incident.
It was interesting.
I remember it.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking of Cheney, and that's what made me think about that.
Well, I know we have kept you quite a long time, so I want to ask you each one final question. Maybe we'll start with you, Kyle. And that is, do you have a favorite memory, or one you can share, of Charlie? A story.
I told you some stories.
Oh, well, I know.
I don't know. It's all sort of, for me, it's just kind of, it's having been able to be around him over time. Mm-hmm. And as I was talking earlier, I mean, he's very generous and treated me like a son or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not really one specific thing, although maybe having to pick him up at the airport and tell him I wasn't going to go to the... I'm not going to one of those. But other than... No, in general, it was just being able to be around... Do whatever I wanted to do, mm-hmm. and get his help.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, maybe meeting Jerry Jeff Walker.
Oh yes. So that was cool.
Yeah. he's a great guy. I bet.
Yeah.
Kyle ran with his staff some too, and that made him. Gave him some opportunities.
Yes.
The rest of us didn't have.
Right.
You know, I think you say one particular thing he did. There probably is, and I hadn't thought of it, except that I genuinely think that being able to see him as the human being that he was, mm-hmm. and knowing that that was the core value that he carried, to me was just something that I can't share properly with everybody
else. I understand that completely. I know that, and what I think I know what you're trying to say. I, having done this, like I said, I never met him.
Yeah.
Got to Nacogdoches, and he was, you know, too late.
Yeah.
To have any interaction because he was already retired. But if you watch the movie, you know, a lot of our impression of him is the movie that you get, and I think that important thing. And while I don't think it was it's not a full caricature, but that's almost what that character is in the movie. It's almost like he's a caricature. Yeah. And you don't capture, I think you don't completely capture the full breadth of the human being.
You have to read the book to do that.
Yeah, the book does to some extent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they put a skirt on me.
I was going to ask you, how did you feel, Amy Adams? Well?
We were at the premiere here in town, and after the movie was over, a mutual friend, the guy that we've known for years, turned around and looked. We were all walking out and looked at Dad and yelled at him and said, "Charlie, you never looked that good in a skirt." That was Telson.
Wilson. Wilson called me before the movie came out to tell me they'd done that.
And he said, "They're gonna play three, actually, all three of you."
Yeah. he said, "I've got to apologize to you, but the writers did that in spite of what we tried to get."
He was very active in, or tried to be very active in, the production of the movie. And I think he traveled to where they filmed it in Africa and tried to make sure that they were true to you know, the uniforms were right, the equipment was right. You know, how much influence he had, who knows?
Who knows? But dang it.
That's right.
Oh, you want to make Charles a woman?
Ah, sure.
I'll get Simpson back.
Now, as I understand it, but can't swear to, the hot tub scene was accurate.
Was it?
That he did just blow the minds of the people that were in that hot tub with him by watching the news. And that was something he always did. And whatever else he was doing in that hot tub, I don't know.
But I love his explanation. You know, they did the documentary on Charles for this documentary. I love the explanation he had in that when they asked him about the hot tub and the incident and was there cocaine. And he said, well, this is what he said. He goes, "There was a hot tub. I was in the hot tub. Yes, there were women in the hot tub with me. Yes, there was cocaine there. Did I partake in the cocaine? Only one person knows that. That person stopped talking."
That's pretty good.
So, well, this has been great. Lord, did we not get everything you needed? Did you anything you have to ask? Need to ask? Want to ask?
Unless you have some opinion on his political ideology.
Charlie's?
Yeah, what would you call him?
I would call him a very socially liberal protector of the country. I mean, he couldn't care less what people did. He didn't want them to care about what he did. But he looked out for people, and he had a very strong sense. I mean, he didn't do that stuff in Afghanistan necessarily for the Afghanis. I mean, he was looking out for us. Sure, it helped them, but he was, you know, I came back from Laredo. I forgot about this. I came back from Laredo. Every year they have the George Washington's birthday celebration down there. And when I was working for Coastal, I'd have to go down and do all that. And I came back, got off the plane, went to the grocery store to get some milk. And there on the front page of the Houston Post, which was still existing at that time, was a picture of Charlie. Y'all probably got this picture with his the bullet things on and the two tall Afghanis, bandoliers, and the two tall Afghanis standing next to him with the headline, "I want to kill Russians as painfully as possible."
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my God.
That's what his sister said when he said that. I want to kill Russians.
He did say that.
Painfully and as slowly as possible. Yeah. And Sharon said, she told him, now, Charlie, you don't really mean that. He goes, yes, I do.
Oh, he did. He definitely meant it. But that's, you know.
So you classify him the social liberal, and cares about the country.
Cares about the country, very much a military. I mean, he loved being on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. Mm-hmm. He got to do a lot of stuff being on the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee. Yeah. But that's the way I would characterize it.
Okay.
I'm going to have to get out of here.
We all
do. We all do. I will go ahead and stop this.